From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with Joe Dallas, author of the new book, Christians in a Cancel Culture, speaking with truth and grace in a hostile world. Let's now rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and Joe Dallas in their conversation.
I watched a film titled Pray Away. And at the very beginning of this film, in caps, it says, all major medical and mental health associations have denounced conversion therapy as harmful. It also notates that approximately 700,000 people have gone through some form of conversion therapy in the U.S. alone, and that a national survey found that the LGBTQ youth who experienced conversion therapy were more than twice as likely to attempt suicide. And then the film is dedicated to those who survived this kind of therapy, and especially those, the film says, who did not survive it. The film is about Exodus International. You were involved with Exodus International. And essentially what this film is saying is that the leaders of Exodus had no qualifications and that they were fundamentalists who believed God created the world and that homosexuality is bad. What say you?
Well, I at least agree with those last few sentences. We did believe and do believe that God created the world. We also believe that God created humanity, that God created humanity with specific intentions, and that homosexuality is not one of those intentions. I believe our anatomy testifies to that. I believe the contrast between men and women testifies to that, and I believe the Word of God strongly testifies to that. Having said all of that, let me say that wherever you have effective propaganda, you'll have a combination of fear and exaggeration. Just for example, the film conveniently says some 700,000 people have gone through this thing called conversion therapy with no way of really backing those figures up or of doing any sort of assessment to determine whether or not that number of people have gone through such a thing. Secondly, conversion therapy is a very sinister term, isn't it? I mean, it conjures up the idea of a Frankenstein scientist creating some sort of monster or experimenting on people. So let's cut to the chase. As long as there are homosexual people, there will be homosexual people who come to Christ. And as long as there are homosexual people who come to Christ, there will be homosexual people who realize that homosexuality is not God's will. They will want discipling and support and guidance. That's what we provide. I have never met a Christian counselor or a Christian minister or Christian ministry who said the goal is to convert people's sexual desires from gay to straight. Our goal has always been to help people to live faithful lives, part of which will mean resisting desires that would take them outside of God's will. And then when the client has the potential for a response to a member of the opposite sex and falls in love with someone of the opposite sex and wants to pursue that, of course we would encourage it. And if an individual does not feel attracted to the opposite sex, I would discourage that individual from entering into a marriage. So I think the misrepresentation is huge and grossly unfair. I got to tell you, Hank, I saw a movie like this a few years back called Boy Erased, and its portrayal of a ministry like mine was so harrowing. My gosh, in this film, the people in the ministry hit people with Bibles, beat them, held them underwater, called them horrible names, humiliated them, and degraded them in front of everybody. And I told my wife, man, if I did half the stuff they showed in that film, I'd pass a law against myself. So I think that the misrepresentation factor in these films is huge. But I will say this, too. None of us is above criticism. I am proud of the years I spent with Exodus. I considered it an honor to work with them. And I still consider it an honor to work with people who make a decision similar to one I made by the grace of God back in 1984. And that is, I want to be a disciple of Jesus and submit all parts of my life to him, my sexuality included. I never sought out change. I sought out obedience. That's what we're still doing. But watching this film, and I've watched it myself, Hank, I think that what we have to do is consider the criticisms that they are making and weigh whether or not the evidence backs them up. I do not recall Exodus International ever promising people that they would be free of their temptations, and I believe this film implies that that's what we all did, and that is not true. I think the film implies that we all clung to a psychological Freudian theory on the nature and development of homosexuality. I do not believe that that is broadly true. I think there were some with Exodus who did adopt a neo-Freudian approach, and I think that in some cases that approach was applicable to people, but never was it viewed as having more authority than the scripture itself. I think that people are portraying this type of ministry, in this film in particular, they're portraying this type of ministry as coercive and as repressive. And that's especially ironic to me because I know in the work I do and the work I've seen other ministries do, people come voluntarily saying, I believe homosexuality is wrong. Will you help me to live my life in accordance with those beliefs? That's not coercive. It's not repressive. And if I may add one more thing here, Hank. My biggest disappointment with this film is that here you have four people, and I knew all of them pretty well. I co-labored with them, and they were also good friends of mine. All of them at one time believed homosexuality is a sin. Now they are all openly gay or lesbian. Many of them are in relationships now, and they're all denouncing what they used to believe in. But not one of them in this film, not one, explained how they came to the conclusion that what they used to believe was a sin is now something sanctioned by God. Not one of them talked about how they interpret scripture now on the issue. Not one of them talked about how they themselves prayerfully studied the word and how they concluded that the word legitimizes what they are doing. They relied only on their experience, by which they said, I prayed for my feelings to go away. They did not go away. Therefore, I have decided that God intended me to have them. Well, good grief. Hank, that's a scary way to determine what God intended, because I can tell you a lot of things I feel every day that I sure don't think God intended me to feel, much less act on. So I think that that is a very faulty foundation, and the title itself is very misleading. Nobody in Exodus ever said, if you just go home and pray, all your homosexual temptations will go away. If we had said that, we wouldn't have been sponsoring conferences every year to teach people what to do with their sexual desires. So I guess, as you can see, I've got my opinion on this.
Yeah, and I think it's a good opinion. The title's misleading. The notion that what is being offered is equally misleading. But there's an end game here, and that is to tell the church what it can and what it cannot say. And I think that end game is something that we ought to be very aware of as Christians.
Hank, many people are naive to this, but they shouldn't be. A lot of people look at films like Pray Away, or they look at these bans on so-called conversion therapy, which none of us refer to as what we do, but regardless. And they think, well, those laws, those bans, those restrictions are only going to apply to these few ministers or counselors who do that kind of work. That's not true. Now, just for example, in Canada, I believe it was in Calgary, when a ban on conversion therapy was passed, the city council openly discussed the implications of it. And one of the council members said, okay, if we are saying that ministers cannot do so-called conversion therapy, what if a gay man goes to a church and says to the pastor, I'm gay, what does the Bible say? Can the pastor tell him it's a sin? And one of the council members supporting the ban said, no, he may not. Unless he takes a non-judgmental position on this, he could be fined $10,000 or face prison time. That's the end goal here. Because, Hank, think about it. if you call something a sin, and you're calling it a sin from a biblical perspective, you have to also be saying that sin can be overcome. If sin can be overcome, then a homosexual can change. Therefore, if you say homosexuality is a sin, you have to be also saying that a homosexual can change. Now, when we say a homosexual can change, that doesn't mean that he will lose all temptations or she will lose all desires. It means that the behavior can change, the identity can change, and the power of that sin in the person's life can change. Well, that's not acceptable to the people who are trying to shut down all condemnation of homosexuality. So what they're basically saying is, if you say homosexuality is a sin, you are practicing conversion therapy. Therefore, all of the opposition to conversion therapy, it's not just being leveled at those of us who do this work. It's being leveled at every Bible-believing church that holds the biblical position on human sexuality. It's very naive not to recognize that.
Stay right here. We'll be back soon to rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Joe Dallas. You've based your understanding of today's sensitive social issues on the Bible's truth. Mainstream culture not only sees these issues differently, but calls you bigoted for rejecting views they've deemed self-evident. So how do you witness Christ's love to those ready to write you off as hateful? Be sure to read Joe Dallas's new book, Christians in a Cancel Culture, Speaking with Truth and Grace in a Hostile World. To receive your copy, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org. That's equip.org. Bertrand Russell famously said, "Most people would rather die than think, and many of them do." Not so with CRI support team members. Support team members are not only serious thinkers, but their membership in CRI's support team helps to equip hundreds of thousands of fellow believers around the globe each and every month. Are you not a member? Then you're missing out. Not only do support team members form the backbone of Christian Research Institute's outreaches, but they enjoy their selection of resources from our Equipping Essentials library and receive a complimentary subscription to CRI's award-winning Christian Research Journal. Just two of the benefits of membership. To discover how you can make a difference 24/7 in equipping believers at home and abroad to stand for life and truth, check out the benefits of membership at equip.org.
You've based your understanding of today's sensitive social issues on the Bible's truth. Mainstream culture not only sees these issues differently, but calls you bigoted for rejecting views they've deemed self-evident. So how do you witness Christ's love to those who write you off as hateful? Christians in a Cancel Culture by Joe Dallas breaks down how you can speak wisdom about politically charged and personal subjects with equal parts compassion and conviction. This book will prepare you to stay true to the Bible's views on sin, salvation, racism, gender identity, homosexuality, and abortion, while teaching you how you can sustain relationships with those who feel threatened by God's truth. To receive Christians in a Cancel Culture, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org. That's equip.org. Hank Hanegraaff has dedicated his life to defending truth because truth matters. Yet an encounter with Christians in the underground church of China left Hanegraaff contemplating his Christian experience. They were experiencing something beyond truth. They were experiencing life. Truth Matters, Life Matters More by Hank Hanegraaff is two books in one. Because Truth Matters, Part 1 equips Christians to defend the essential truths of the historic Christian faith. In Part 2, Hank explains why life matters more and how we can experience the height of human existence, union with God. Prepare to move past intellectually knowing about God to experientially knowing God in Christ. To receive your copy of Truth Matters, Life Matters More, The Unexpected Beauty of an Authentic Christian Life, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org.
Let's now rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and Joe Dallas as they continue their conversation.
A canard worth commenting on, you bring this up in your book, that Christians were wrong about slavery, they were wrong about women's rights, and now they're making the same mistake today about gays and lesbians. What's wrong with that generalization?
Well, I'm glad you used the word generalization. That's the first thing that's wrong with it. It's a generalization. What, all Christians were in favor of slavery? Not on your life. Good grief. The abolitionist movement was largely fueled by Christian believers, both in our nation and in other nations. It's also true in more recent history that segregation was opposed by many born-again believers within the United States. So right off the bat, it's an inaccurate generalization to say, oh, the Christian church has been wrong on slavery, or the Christian church was wrong on segregation, or for that matter, that the Christian church was wrong about women. The Christian church has largely, and I mean overwhelmingly largely, been opposed to the denigration of women. If you believe that men and women have different roles, you are not assuming denigration of either men or of women. But probably the broader problem with that argument, Hank, is something I think we all know. If a group or an individual was wrong in the past about one thing, it does not mean that that same group or individual must now be wrong in the present about something else. There is not one person listening to this podcast who has not been wrong about something. Not one. Are you really going to therefore abdicate your responsibility to take a stand on right versus wrong because you have been wrong in the past? I can't imagine that. So I think it's kind of a cop-out. Instead of taking the time to weigh the rightness or wrongness of something, now people are simply saying, well, you, the church, were wrong about some things in the past. And even if for the sake of argument I concede at that point, which I don't concede, because the whole church was not wrong about these issues, I would say that even if a group was wrong about something in the past, it does not mean it is necessarily wrong about something in the present. It only means that a group could be wrong about something in the present. Well, I'll buy that. I could be wrong. Anybody could be wrong. That's why we say, okay, how do we determine what's right or wrong? Is there a verifiable source? Yes, let's go to the verifiable source to settle the issue. And for me, that does settle the issue.
Yeah, well said. Another intriguing title, Eternal Lives Matter. It has to do with discussing race. And one of the things you bring up right at the beginning is CRT, critical race theory. A lot of people are hearing about critical race theory. They really don't understand its roots. Can you elaborate?
Yeah, critical race theory actually has its roots in critical theory, which is a much older construct. It's the assumption that people are oppressed by their social structures and that to achieve their liberation, you need something more than objective knowledge. You need intuition to really emancipate the people who are oppressed by social structures. Who are the oppressed? Anybody who's in the minority. And that particular belief leads you to believe that whoever is in the majority is thereby guilty of imposing an oppressive structure on everybody else. Now, up until, I'd say, the last few decades, most people had not even heard of critical theory. And I think that that's because it was not directly affecting so many of us. As I said in the book, I did myself have some exposure to critical theory when I was part of the Gay Affirming Church, because at that time, there were many people who were committed to feminism and towards ending racism. And they held the belief, based on critical theory, that anybody in the majority was guilty of the oppression of the minority. Therefore, all whites were racist and all men were sexist. And that if you denied the fact that as a white you were racist, it was only because you didn't want to take responsibility for the racism that you benefited from. And so that played out even, as long ago as the 70s when I was a part of that movement. But it's just within the last few years, with the development of Black Lives Matter critical race theory, which basically teaches that racism is systemic. It has infected every part of American life, and thereby all whites who benefit from white privilege, and if you are white, it is predetermined that you benefit from white privilege, all whites are thereby complicit with racism. Whites, therefore, must first acknowledge their own racism, and if they are unaware of it, they need to do the work to educate themselves and to listen to critical race theory and study it, admit their guilt, and then, having done so, they need to take action. They need to vote for the right candidates. They need to support whatever the current goals of groups are, like Black Lives Matter, whether it's defunding the police or whether it is re-educating the masses or whether it is redistribution, or one of the latest ideologies is equity as opposed to equality. Equity, making sure that everybody basically has the same amount, that everybody is basically dealing with the same level of financial independence, the same level of opportunity. It's basically a way of saying everybody should have the same amount of everything. And with that kind of a very broad socialist agenda, the Black Lives Matter movement is trying to re-educate Americans to believe that racism is one of the primary issues we have to deal with today. Now, having said all that, no rational, much less decent person can deny that racism is evil, right? I mean, it's not bad, it's evil. Bad is if you do 75 miles per hour on the freeway when you should do 65. Evil is to believe that one race is superior to another. So that we can agree on. But as I argue in the book, it is unfair and illogical to presume people guilty of a sin unless they have practiced that sin or expressed affirmation of that sin. If one of those two isn't present, you have no right to call somebody guilty. And a biblical view of sin is just that. It basically says we are all sinners, that we must accept. But we are not guilty of a particular sin unless it can be shown by our actions or our expression that we are either committing that sin or approving of that sin. And this is what is tearing this country apart as we speak, Hank, is the fact that a lot of people in racial minorities are being taught to accuse those who are in the racial majority, and those in the racial majority are feeling more and more defensive and helpless and wondering what to do. So in polar opposition to what Dr. King said he dreamed about, a time when his children would be judged not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character, now it is being presumed that the color of one's skin does determine the content of one's character. Look, if that isn't racism, I don't know what is.
You know, that sounds a lot, Joe, like white-splaining. I say that tongue-in-cheek, but what does that term mean to you?
Good question. Well, let me go back to critical theory itself, because critical theory is sort of the mother church to critical race theory, queer theory, feminist theory, trans theory, and so forth. Critical theory basically teaches a Gnostic approach to truth, that you intuit what's true, you feel what's true. Don't confuse me with the facts. When you get into facts and statistics and clear definitions, now you're white-splaining. Now you're relying on verifiable logic to prove your point. So the word white-splaining, it basically is meant to shame white people from having an opinion, just like the argument, well, if you're a man, you can't talk about abortion. Well, if you're white, you can't understand racism. And what's especially racist about that is not only that it is a form of prejudice against whites, but I think it's a terribly prejudiced thing to say about racial minorities as well, because the implication is only whites rely on logic and verifiable fact. Well, good grief, what does that say about all other races? That they are not logical? That they don't rely on verifiable fact? That to me, whether intended or not, is a terribly racist position to take.
You know, before we move away from this, Joe, I want to just maybe ask you to comment on one more thing here, because this is a macro issue. There's a lot at stake here. people see so many separate issues and they're not tying them together properly as you do in the book. We're talking about broad-based re-education, defunding the police, reparations, wealth redistribution. All of these are part and parcel of something that's being foisted on us. And most people don't know what that train that's heading directly for us actually looks like.
We'll have to stop here for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Join us again next time when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Joe Dallas, author of the new book, Christians in a Cancel Culture, Speaking with Truth and Grace in a Hostile World. Our firm commitment here at the Christian Research Institute is to defend the faith once for all delivered to the saints and equip believers to become true disciples of Jesus Christ. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you Joe Dallas's book, Christians in a Cancel Culture, Speaking with Truth and Grace in a Hostile World. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or visit our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more.
You've based your understanding of today's sensitive social issues on the Bible's truth. Mainstream culture not only sees these issues differently, but calls you bigoted for rejecting views they've deemed self-evident. So how do you witness Christ's love to those who write you off as hateful? Christians in a Cancel Culture by Joe Dallas breaks down how you can speak wisdom about politically charged and personal subjects with equal parts compassion and conviction. This book will prepare you to stay true to the Bible's views on sin, salvation, racism, gender identity, homosexuality, and abortion, while teaching you how you can sustain relationships with those who feel threatened by God's truth. To receive Christians in a Cancel Culture, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org. That's equip.org.